Good afternoon. I would like to continue on with part two on socialism. The Green New Deal, which Kamala supports, is a major part of Agenda 21, which is a blueprint, a plan, an action plan to inventory and control all land, all water, all animals, all minerals, all production, all energy, all information, and all human beings in the world. It's a total comprehensive plan, and data collection is a vital part of that plan. We've all been in the inventory phase for a very long time. We're now moving towards the control phase. We're now in a transitional period between representative government and government by unelected boards and commissions, erasure of jurisdictional boundaries, loss of private property rights, loss of sovereignty, and loss of our freedom. We're losing sovereignty not only to our dirt, but to our person. This is a concern not only for the United States citizens, but for citizens all over the world. Prior to the current World Economic Forum theme, the Great Reset, it was called Agenda 21. Now it's called Agenda 2030. Meaning everything they wanted to accomplish in the world scene concerning the environment, the economy, equity, along with diversity and inclusion was to be accomplished, completed before the end of the 21st century. They missed the mark. The new target is 2030, and it was Klaus Schwab, the founder of the World Economic Forum, who said in 2030, you'll own nothing and be happy about it. Well, somebody's going to own something. The elite want to take self-responsibility off your shoulders. They want to destroy small business because they don't fit in with their plans. That's why during the COVID-19 pandemic, 100,000 small businesses were shut down. It was the mom and pop stores that were permanently closed while the big companies like Walmart, Costco, and Target, Fortune 500 companies, remained open. I noticed that President Trump said that the small businesses represent the major portion of our economy. Agenda 21 is the biggest public relations scam in the history of the world. It enables and justifies the using of smart meters to monitor the use of our electricity and gas, pulverizing our roads and dams in rural areas, exhausting our military with endless wars, instituting carbon tax on industry, and sinking our economy. They are diagnosing a huge portion of our population with mental illness and drugging us. They are taking over our educational system. They are bleeding our transportation system with high cross trains to nowhere, like in California here. They're revamping our schools with sustainable development principles in every subject, every course, from pre-kindergarten to postgraduate work. They are rethinking mathematics, which has nothing to do with mathematics. They're declaring our public lands off limits to humans and changing every land use document in the nation to require high density housing in city centers to more easily control and surveil us. They are allowing warrantless searches, identifying us as potential enemy combatants, and targeting much of the Bible as hate speech. This is the end game. In this book that you see, The Rescue, the planet groans over every time it registers a new birth. This is taught to kids. This is a children's activity. How can they be part of saving the planet if they're alive? Then we look at Tragedy and Hope. In this book, Tragedy and Hope, written in 1949, but published posthumously in 1981, Quigley purports to trace the history of the secret society founded in 1891 by Cecil Rhodes and Alfred Milner. The society consisted of an inner circle, didn't have a name, the Society of the Elect, and an outer circle. The society as a whole, they didn't want it to have a name. The powers of the financial capitalism and had another far-reaching aim, nothing less than to create a world system. This is in Tragedy and Hope. A world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy as a whole. Next slide. And Quigley wrote about the secret network operating both in the U.S. and Europe to control the world. The Georgetown professor added that their work would be carried out by secret agreements arrived at in a frequent private meetings and conferences like the Bilderbergers, trilateral commission gatherings, numerous other invitation-only press-barred assemblies where powerful leaders of nations meet behind closed doors to steer mankind into the New World Order. The system was to be controlled in a feudalist fashion by the central banks of the world, acting in concert with secret meetings and conferences. The apex of the system was to be the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, a private bank owned and controlled by the world's central banks. John Ruskin Quigley traces the origin of socialism's influence on the banking elite to the arrival of the professor John Ruskin at Oxford in 1870. Cecil Rhodes was an enthusiastic student. In fact, he took careful notes of Ruskin's speech, and he wanted to use that to bring all the habitable portions of the world under the domination of a ruling elite. To that end, he uses a portion of his vast wealth to establish a famous Rhodes Scholarships. Rhodes, there was a country in South Africa called Rhodesia, and that country, along with much of what South Africa had, was central for, known for diamonds and gold. And Cecil Rhodes had vast amounts of wealth, and he wanted to use that wealth to establish the famous Rhodes Scholarship. What Cecil Rhodes and Alfred Miller had in mind was a formation of a master-slave society based on the principles in eugenics derived from Plato's Republic. Malthusian eugenics is the philosophy of depopulation through reduction of inferior races, they call them human weeds, and the selective breeding of a race of thoroughbreds, as described early in the century by the Rockefeller-funded Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger. When Thomas Malthus's theory of population was later coupled with Charles Darwin's evolutionary model, the result was known as social Darwinism. Cecil Rhodes' roundtable, as you see here, is kind of controlling all of these satellite organizations. And you can see the Council on Foreign Relations, the United Nations, the Bilderberg Group, the Club of Rome. All of these organizations are really controlled by a central group that Cecil Rhodes and Alfred Milner founded. And when you talk about Ian Fleming's basic James Bond series, you will see in the next slide that the country was probably He was a friend of Alfred Milner and basically knew what their plan was. And so when you see these James Bond movies, you realize that it's based upon their idea of world domination. So the country was probably had 15,000 communists and probably 100,000 communist sympathizers who are trying to control 332 million people in the United States. There's not that many of them, but they get positions of influence, like this was the long march through the institutions where they marched through. They basically brought the Frankfurt School over to this country, John Dewey did in 1933, and they started systematically taking over all of the influential areas of this country. They bought up the 25 leading newspapers, and they put their men through the Rockefeller Foundation, was able to give money so that they could set up their people as the editor-in-chief of these newspapers. They bought the newspapers, set up their man as editor-in-chief, and then he would hire men who were politically in line with them, Marxists, who would be under them, and it would go right down through the system. They did the same thing through the universities, through the radio, television, every media that they could find. They used money from the Rockefeller Foundation, which was Marxist in general, and they would hire people who were Marxist. And then when anybody came in, got hired by a university, like my good friend Jerry Bergman, he ended up getting fired. Why? Because he wasn't teaching evolution. Evolution, of course, is teaching a way of explaining things without God. And since these socialists don't believe in God, because there are absolute standards once you accept God, then all of a sudden you have to get rid of that particular professor. Well, basically, this all started in Jekyll Island, Georgia. Next slide. The Federal Reserve Act was the brainchild of Baron Alfred Rothschild of London. The final version of the act was decided at the secret meeting in Jekyll Island. This was owned by J.P. Morgan. These people met in secret. They actually traveled and tried to pretend they didn't know each other if they happened to be on the same train. But they began to establish the Federal Reserve Act. This was actually, their plan was established in 1910, and it was 3 years later that the Federal Reserve Act brought about the killing of the U.S. Constitution, and it was the determining act of the international financiers in consolidating financial power in the United States. Pierre Jay, initiated into the Order of Skull and Bones in 1892, became the first chairman of the New York Federal Reserve Bank, and a dozen members of the Federal Reserve can be linked to the same order. Then we have Wall Street and communism. Stanford historian Anthony Sutton exposed the Wall Street role in establishing communist state in Russia, financing communism and profiting from communism. Now that you had the Federal Reserve, now all you needed to do was you needed to start wars, and the country would have to borrow from the Federal Reserve to fund the war. And in doing so, they would gain interest on that money. But you needed to find a, you needed an enemy. And so you needed an enemy that was viable. So they had to build up the Soviet economy militarily, and they had to ensure, first of all, a revolution in Russia so that they would be an enemy. Leon Trotsky was given tons of money and sent over to the Soviet Union to fund the revolution, communist revolution. Now they are stealing our money. This is the Federal Reserve, because by loaning money to the government, basically, which has to pay it back with interest, they are actually, the more we spend, the less our dollar is worth. So it's a tax on us. What was worth a dollar in 1913 is now worth 1 cent. This is the Frankfurt School I was talking about. It was founded in the Weimar Republic during the European interwar between in 1918 to 1939. It was comprised of these intellectuals, academics, pseudo-intellectuals, basically, people who were mostly Marxist in belief. And it was a splinter group of leftist pseudo-intellectuals. Many of them were Jewish atheists, trying mainly by the means of so-called long war against the institutions to corrupt the traditional Christian values of the Western culture with pseudo-values, in other words, destroy America from within. Their ultimate goal was to take over countries, not with guns and weapons, but with pseudo values and ideas that could change their way that people think. Russia knew that they could never win militarily, so they had to destroy us culturally, basically taking away our belief in God. The basic trait of the Frankfurt School is a merger of Marxist philosophy with Freudian psychoanalysis in an effort to achieve societal changes made in line with communist directives, destroying the free enterprise capitalism by undermining its economic engine, the middle class, destruction of the basic building block of society, the family, destroying our Judeo-Christian values. The result of ideas spread by the Frankfurt School is that the society wanders down a road towards insolvency, immorality, totalitarianism, and basically is disguised under the fig leaf of science. Among the theoretical derivatives of the Frankfurt School is the so-called critical theory or critical race theory. Professors of the school were the source of ideas that fueled what is now known as students' protests of 1968. Significant members of the Herbert were Herbert Marcuse. He's the one that came up with the make love, not war statement. But he went after the universities. Others, like many of the others were Max Halkmeier, who helped infect America with cultural Marxism. They went after Hollywood. They went after Australia. William Musenberg was dispatched to pursue Hollywood and take over there. And so that's why Hollywood is predominantly communist in nature. Gus Hall ran for president in 1972, 1976, 1980, and 1984. He had a statement, if you can read it, it was that Christians are always singing about the blood. Let us give them enough of it. Let us slit their throats and drag them over the altar and let them drown in their own blood. I dream of a day when the last priest strangled on the guts of the last preacher. Wasn't that nice of him? Well, he was head of the Communist Party. Angela Davis was his running mate, and he ran for president for 4 terms. And he said that the Communist Party USA would eventually become the Democratic Party would eventually become a front for the Communist Party USA. And he was correct. It has happened. He talked about three-legged stool. His three-legged stool was the Communist Party USA, the Democratic Party, and the Forces for Political Independence. Forces for Political Independence were things like radical environmentalism, those who opposed capital punishment, Women's March, LGBTQ, transgender advocates, and about 50 other organizations, but they all have communist roots. Now, Herbert Hoover warned at a reception on his 80th birthday in West Branch, Ohio, August 10th, 1954. He said, "I have witnessed on the ground of in 20 nations the workings of the philosophy of that Antichrist, Karl Marx. There arises constantly in my mind the forces which make for progress and those which may corrode away the safeguards of freedom in America. I want to say something, not in the tones of Jeremiah, but in the spirit of St. Paul. Our founding fathers did not invent the priceless boon of individual freedom and respect for human dignity of man. That great gift to mankind sprang from the Creator, not from governments. Today, the socialist virus and poison gas generated by Karl Marx and Frederick Engels have spread into every nation on earth. Their dogma is absolute materialism, which defies truth and religious faith." Hoover continued, "A nation is strong or weak. It thrives and perishes upon what it believes to be true. If our youth are rightly instructed in the faith of our fathers, there will be power. Our power will be stronger. To this whole gamut of socialist infections, I say to you, God has blessed us with another wonderful word, heritage. The great documents of that heritage are not from Karl Marx. They are from the Bible, the Declaration of Independence, and our Constitution. And with them alone can be the safeguards of freedom." John Sweeney became the head of the AFL-CIO it was a fraudulent election, but he was a Marxist who served as president of the AFL-CIO from 1995 to 2005, which has 55 affiliated unions, 12.5 million members, including 3.2 million members in the Working America, its new community affiliate. The 1995 election was the first contested election in AFL-CIO history. If you wanted to run for the Democratic ticket, you had to get the support of the unions. Well, the unions now control the Democratic Party. And so if you want to get anything through, you have to go along with communist agenda. In other words, liberal politics, border crisis, homelessness, defund police, street gangs, health crisis, looting, as you see in the next slide. As I've mentioned previously, Cleon Skousen was put on the staff of the FBI to put together 45 communist goals, which has been followed right down to the present. Here's a partial list. Get control of the schools. Use them as transmission belts for socialism and current communist propaganda. Gain control of all student newspapers. Infiltrate the press. Gain control of key positions in radio, TV, motion pictures. Eliminate laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship in violation of free speech and free press. Break down cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography, obscenity in schools, books, magazines, motion pictures, radio, and TV. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, promiscuity as natural and healthy and normal. Deb Haaland, Secretary for the Interior, was a communist who banned uranium mining, appointed by Biden, probably by Obama, but appointed by Biden. She was able to shut down all the oil leases all over the country, shut down the pipeline, putting 60,000 people out of work. Putin is benefiting from the high oil prices. China's loving it. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, during her swearing-in and ceremony with Vice President Kamala Harris, we see a picture there. Then also they want to shut down the port of Long Beach, the Inland Empire. Much of our material for coming into this country is coming in through ships that are coming into Long Beach Port and the Inland Empire storage. This is an economic engine. If the CCP can shut down this along with the Amazon and FedEx, their goal is to destroy the U.S. economy in what is called a people's war. China is sinking fast. Corruption is rampant. They are getting ready to attack America. We need a new intelligence agency that will crack down on voter fraud and organized crime, catch some of the underlings, and get them to rat on their bosses while promising protection. Who is totally controlled by CCP, the World Health Organization, and its communist head? Then we jump to advocacy journalism. President Trump did not pose a threat to freedom of the press, as did certain of his predecessors. Newsrooms and journalists are not imperiled by the current president, Trump, as he was. There were no sedition acts attacking speech and free press during his reign. No executive orders imprisoning reporters and shuttering newspapers. No FCC actions against broadcast stations. No unprecedented criminal charges against media organizations or reporters. No omnipresent propaganda operations, etc. Nonetheless, constant media refrain, whether from journalists or editorialists, trying to convince the American people and demonstrably a false narrative that President Trump had launched unprecedented battering on freedom of the press, thereby undermining the credibility of the institution of a free press and the First Amendment of the public. In other words, they're doing what they were doing, accusing him of doing what they were doing. The First Amendment, the advocacy journalism is a genre of journalism that adopts a non-objective viewpoint, usually for some social or political purposes. In every institution in this country, almost everyone that's not a Christian university is teaching advocacy journalism. In other words, take a point, usually a liberal point, and prove that. And the truth is not important. What's important is what you advocate, and in this case, you're advocating for some liberal position. And that's where our newspapers has come from. In fact, we find that Mark Levin has written a book on freedom of the press. And you'll see this in the deep state. He says, unfreedom of the press is about how those entrusted with news reporting in the modern media are destroying freedom of the press from within, not government oppression or suppression, not President Donald Trump finger pointing, but present day newsrooms and journalists, indeed social activism, progressive groupthink, Democratic Party partisanship, opinion and propaganda passed off as news, the staging of pseudo events, self-censorship, bias by omission, and outright falsehoods are too often substituted for old-fashioned objective fact-gathering and news reporting. A self-perpetuating and reinforcing mindset has replaced the independent and impartial thinking, and the American people know it. Thus, the credibility of the mass media has never been lower. Unlike the early Patriot Press, today's newsrooms and journalists are mostly hostile to America's founding principles, traditions, and institutions. They do not promote free speech and freedom of the press. Despite their self-serving and self-righteous claims, indeed, they serve as social filters attempting to enforce uniformity of thought and social political activism centered on the progressive ideology and agenda. Issues, events, groups, and individuals that do not fit the narrative are dismissed and diminished. Those that do fit narrative are elevated and celebrated. Of course, this paradigm greatly influences the culture, the government, and the national psyche. It defines the media-created reality, whether or not it has basis in true reality around which individuals organize their thoughts and beliefs, in some cases their lives. It bears remembering that the purpose of a free press, like the purpose of free speech, is to nurture the mind, communicate ideas, communicate ideology, share notions, inspire creativity, and advocate for and reinforce America's founding principles. That is to contribute to vigorous, productive, healthy, and happy individual, to a well-functioning civil society and republic. Moreover, the media are to expose official actions aimed at squelching speech and communication. But when the media function as a propaganda tool for a single political party and ideology, they not only destroy their own purpose, but threaten the existence of a free republic. Long after the nation's founding, President Adams and his Federalist Party instituted the Sedition Act of 1798 and made it illegal to write, print, or utter or publish or cause to be done or assist in it any false, scandalous, malicious writing against the government of the United States or either the House or Congress or the President with the intent to defame or bring into contempt or disrepute or execute against either the hatred of the people of the United States or stir up sedition. Numerous reports of President Wilson's war on policies were charged and imprisoned. In other words, this was something that was going on throughout various administrations, but Trump did not. Trump did not pose a threat to freedom of the press. He did just the opposite. In fact, Associated Press found that Obama administration used the 1917 Espionage Act with unprecedented vigor, prosecuting more people under that for leaking sensitive information to the public than all the previous modern administrations combined. Now let's look at pietism. Above the portrait of Philip Jacob Spencer, a German Lutheran theologian and leading figure in the German pietism, Martin Luther began the Reformation in 1517. The just shall live by faith, Habakkuk 2:4. But when some German kings wanted to break away from Rome, they decided that everyone in the kingdom had to be Lutheran. To many of these kingdoms, it was not the same personal revelation that Martin Luther had, but just an acknowledgement of a state-approved doctrine. Soon a revival movement began called Pietism. Pietism believed that being a Christian was more than just acknowledging a new set of doctrines. Scriptural as they may be, a person needed to have a personal experience with Jesus, and when they do, their life would change by the indwelling power of the Holy Spirit. They would no longer be doing worldly things that they used to do, such as going to bars, brothels, lewd theaters, or being involved in worldly government. Unfortunately, that was the last one that was wrong. The rest of it was fine, except for the fact that they didn't want to be involved in worldly government, and as a result, Hitler was able to take over Germany. The pietists, those in the church, would not get involved in government. We need to be getting our pastors and churches to be involved in government when it goes against the laws of God, because who else is going to stop them if the Christians do not do that? And so Nazis have announced their plan, enforcing it, and pagan religion all over the world by which the Holy Bible and the Cross of Mercy would be displaced by Mein Kampf and the swastika. And of course, that alone, the communism is against Christianity. Communism is antithetical to Christianity. And then we go to silencing the church. Johnson was afraid, as a Texas Democrat, that the churches would go against him. And so he passed this. He managed to get through this Johnson Amendment, which silenced the churches. They weren't allowed to comment on who they were going to vote for or tell people who to vote for. Churches are getting around that by saying who they would vote for, and they say, you're free to vote whoever you want, but I'm going to vote for such and such, and so they can get along that one. It hasn't been enforced too much. Reagan, Trump actually passed an amendment to curtail its implementation. In other words, he couldn't re-veto it, but he could make a statement that they shouldn't enforce it. We have deep state foundations. Gates Foundation, funded by Common Core. Soros Foundation funds Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, Catholics for Choice, and several other organizations. These foundations have not been taxed, and so they're able to fund a lot of these liberal organizations. The most national elections in the United States provided citizens with a choice between two known members of different satanic cults. And so, unfortunately, that's true sometimes. And that should not be true, but it has been in the past. So we need to look at the deep state. So we're going to go a couple slides in. The deep state is a shadow government that manipulates and shapes the policies of the visible government without regard to the interests of the country, the U.S. Constitution, the laws erected by Congress, or the public policies of the president, who heads the executive branch. The deep state does exist within the shadows of power and is working to submerge the United States in an emerging new world order against the stated policy of the America First. Leaks from the intelligence community intended to delegitimize and even topple the duly elected president are just part of the evidence of exposing the existence and direction of the power of the deep state. That was when Trump was president. Evidence of the deep state is seen in the use of mass migration to upend Christian culture and the idea of nationhood, the creation of refugee crisis, environmental fear-mongering as a means of advancing world government. The building of regional economic and political blocs is another means of achieving world government. And they do this through ICLEI, International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, where they'll have regions, and each one of the regions can go over state boundaries, and as it does, or city boundaries and cultural boundaries and sometimes national boundaries, and that region becomes, they have to have laws within that region, maybe trade agreements or various other things. Trade agreements are another form of regionalism where they actually can impose laws which are override the laws of that particular state or county or country. And so that's what this deep state is doing. It's setting up regions. Eventually, those regions will be put together to form a one world government. We notice what some evidences of the deep state is, how it permeated most of the government issues of this country. We see this memo, the fact that a memo produced by Rich Higgins while he was serving in the U.S. National Security Council Director for Strategic Planning in the Trump administration in the deep state. He's referred to many times under the deep state. The document outlines coalition of interests that are working to destroy the president, President Trump at the time, and America itself, bringing us toward a hard left Islamic organizations, globalists, mega corporations, the bureaucracy, and others. And what we see is interesting, that 90% of all of the government organizations, institutions, look at this one over there, the federal education. Domestic federal workers in the under Trump, almost all of their funding went to support Hillary Clinton. This is true of almost all the federal, 95% of the money donated by federal employees went to Hillary Clinton's campaign. And so we see this is happening today. The federal employees are pretty much part of the deep state. And they're going against what Trump is trying to do. Conspiracies have always existed throughout history. Conspiracies throughout the Bible, such as Absalom's plot to overthrow King David, the plot to kill the Apostle Paul in Acts 23:12, and in Psalm 2:2, the kings of the earth conspiring against the Lord and his anointed. This is what we see happening today in, I believe, this shadow government. In Ephesians 6:12, Paul warns the faithful of a spiritual struggle against principalities, against powers, against rulers of darkness in the world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And so we find that we are in a battle, the shadow government and others. President Trump was trying to drain the swamp of some of this, and we see his power to do that was somewhat limited, but he did his best. And will do the most he can when he is reelected, hopefully. The deep state is a secret manipulation of the government by the wealthy and powerful to control things and basically to lead us into a globalist one-world government. The globalists have created a refugee crisis. And what they do is they basically start a war, and then the people eventually are supposed to be refugees. But instead of settling them in places around where they live, where they speak the same language, they are settling them in Europe and America, which costs up to 50 times as much that it would to settle them in local areas. Why are they doing this? Because they want to destabilize Europe's and America's culture. They want to destabilize Christianity. So they're bringing Islamic people into Europe. In fact, Muslims become the highest proportion of people in London. In England, they have a Muslim mayor, and in various other places throughout the United States, they're bringing in these migrants, these supposedly refugees. But why don't they bring the Christians over here? Well, they are run by the United Nations, which is a very much of a Marxist organization, and they are trying to destroy the United Nations because the United Nations wants the power that the United States has. So anything that the United Nations does is going to be detrimental to the freedoms that we have in the United States. In fact, just to give you an example, one of the most obvious impacts of mass Islamic immigration is a rapid de-Christianization of almost every facet of European culture. Even prior to the mass immigration, secularization of Europe, which began centuries ago, all but wiped out biblical Christianity in Europe as a religious force, and this combined with the ignorance of history brought about by the government in miseducating the people is no doubt among the reasons that Europe went along with this open borders madness of their rulers, where they were allowing these Muslims to come in. The pace of change was far too slow for globalists, so they began importing millions of Muslims from Africa and the Middle East. Globalists found a new battering ram to associate the obliteration of the Western Christians' foundations. In Belgium, the Red Cross offices were asked to remove crosses and crucifixes from everything to avoid offending Muslims. Similar demands are being made across the continent. In Switzerland, they're being asking the cross to be removed from the nation's flags, saying it no longer corresponds to today's multicultural Switzerland. And from Norway to Italy, where children, even in recent years, sang Christian carols and engaged in other traditional celebrations, Christ is quickly being banned, generally under the guise of diversity and not offering offending Muslims. Nativity scenes, crucifixes, and Christmas parties are no more. In the United Kingdom today, more people attend mosques than churches in England, which was Britain's dominant religion for centuries. Islam is the most widely practiced religion in the Netherlands. And across Europe, Islam is the fastest growing religion. Today, European governments and the unelected regime in Brussels are deliberately importing Muslims by the millions at taxpayer expense while bombing Muslim nations and urging the victims to come to Europe. They are doing it against the will of the people they claim to represent. Unless something radical changes, soon, Europeans' Christian foundations will be totally destroyed. And as Europe's Christian roots are obliterated, the fruit that came from these roots, prosperity, civilization, human rights, liberty, morality, science, and more will cease to exist as well. America is clearly next. We see the riots used by the deep state. What is actually going on with the riots? Riots have been used by Marxists to undermine civilization, limited government, the rule of law, Christianity, traditional morality, free markets, individual liberty, and equating them all to white supremacy. The revolutionists, pressure from below, from Minneapolis to Los Angeles to Chicago to New York to Jacksonville, there was of violent protests, looting, murder, mayhem that seemingly began spontaneously all over the nation in Democratic-controlled cities, but the planning began long before. Many of the groups were openly communists. At the center of the protests that swept through thousands of U.S. cities, Black Lives Matter, the group which officially organized many of the protests, was founded to glorify convicted cop killer Asita Shakur, one of FBI's most wanted terrorists. After robbing banks to fund the revolution, Shakur and her comrades murdered a New Jersey state trooper, Werner Forrester, in shootout. The Weather Underground terrorist group helped her break out of jail. From there, she fled to communist Cuba for refuge. The numerous Democrat-run cities across America, homeless persons were allowed to camp on the streets. COVID responses also included unprecedented shutting down of small businesses. And we see during the COVID pandemic, these cities released criminals, including MS-13 gang members who illegally crossed borders, or ISIS members who accompanied unvetted Middle Eastern immigrants. And so we see to defund the police. Soon crime increased, compounded by defunding the police. Who's responsible for trying to overthrow this republic? Well, there are several forces. We see it's the bankers. Quigley explained central banking, in addition to these pragmatic goals, the powers of financial capitalism had another far-reaching aim, nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economic world as a whole. The system was to control in a feudalist fashion the central banks of the world, acting in concert by secret agreements arrived at frequent private meetings and conferences. The apex of the system was to be the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, a private bank owned and controlled by the world's central banks, which were themselves private corporations. Each central bank sought to dominate this government by its ability to control treasury loans, to manipulate foreign exchanges, to influence the level of economic activity in the country, and to influence the cooperative politicians by subsequent economic rewards in the business world. That is exactly what is happening today. Central banks are trying to establish a system of global feudalism. Once they grasp the implications of that concept, you can understand why Professor Quigley's book had to be suppressed. Some people think that it's the Council on Foreign Relations that is doing all this damage. Well, all the CFR members have one objective in common, and that is that they want to surrender the sovereignty of the United States and the national independence of the United States. Prominent bankers, industrialists, politicians, media owners, and almost everyone of any importance in the United Nations and the United States belongs to the CFR. In 1953, every chairman of the Federal Reserve Board and every chairman of the Disarmament Agency were members, as has been all the American Secretaries of State, all but one Deputy Secretary of State, and all but one Director of the Central Intelligence Agency. In addition, six of our nine presidents have been CFR members. What is their objective? Senator Barry Goldwater tried to warn the American people about the CFR in his book, No Apologies. He wrote, "Their goal is to impose a benign stability on the quarreling family of the nations through a merger and consolidation. They seek elimination of national boundaries, the suppression of racial and ethnic loyalties as a most expeditious value to world peace." He noted that CFR members control both our political parties. Some people think it's the Bilderbergers. Many competent researchers are convinced that the Bilderbergers rule the world. Although they acknowledge the importance of the CFR, they note that it is an American organization and argue that the effort to create a global government must involve people from other nations. Prince Bernard of Netherlands asked a group of prominent Americans and Europeans to help him determine the best way to establish world government. The group met at the Bilderberger Hotel in Holland in 1954, and the name of the hotel where they first convened became the name of the organization. The Bilderbergers have met once or twice a year ever since. Some people think that the Trilateral Commission is responsible. Everyone who studied an effort to unite the world recognizes the importance of foreign relations and the Bilderbergers, but some people contend that those groups are regional and that the New World Order will be established by a Trilateral Commission. They note that members of the organization control commerce and banking in the United States, Europe, Asia, and point to Senator Goldwater's warning. The implications in Governor Rockefeller's presentation have become concrete. Proposals advanced by David Rockefeller's newest international cabal, the Trilateral Commission. Whereas the Council on Foreign Relations is distinctly national in membership, the Trilateral Commission is international. Representation is allocated equally to Western Europe, Japan, and the United States. It's intended to be a vehicle for multinational consolidation of commercial and banking interests by seizing control of the political government of the United States. Some people think maybe it's the Club of Rome, which is a small cadre of international bureaucrats that are hard at work devising a system of global governance that is slowly gaining control over ordinary Americans' lives. Maurice Strong, a Canadian who died November 27th in 2015 at the age of 86, was the indisputable man at the center of this UN power grab. Some of the wealthiest and most powerful men in the world belong to the Club of Rome. In 1999, the international site stated that their objective is to act as an international non-official catalyst of change, a small cadre of obscure international bureaucrats that are hard at work devising a system of global governance that is slowly gaining control over ordinary American lives. Some people ask, who was Maurice Strong? Although he never graduated from high school, by the time he was 21, he held an important position in international finance. Strong owned a large tract of land in Colorado they called the Baca. There, Strong and his wife were establishing an international community of spiritualists, complete with monasteries, devotees of Vedic mother goddess, amulet-carrying Native American shamans, Zen Buddhists, and even Shirley MacLaine. They were not only promoting one world government, they were promoting a one world religion, a substitute for Christianity. Some people think maybe it's the secular humanism that is responsible. We reject those features of traditional religious morality that deny humans a full appreciation of their own potentials and responsibilities. That's secular humanism. Francis Schaeffer, who I met with in Einigen-Antunesee in Switzerland, and spent a whole evening with him, was one of the leading philosophers in America. He actually in the world. He had written something like 55 books, and I think I have most of them. He studied the decline of Western civilization, and he came to the conclusion that secular humanism is responsible for our problems, because secular humanists advocate abortion, homosexuality, prisoners' rights, socialism, world government, and deny the existence of God. Every communist and every socialist is a secular humanist. And although every humanist is not a communist, every communist is a secular humanist. The beliefs of secular humanism were codified in the Second Humanist Manifesto, where 17 concepts were presented that changed the world. Humanist Manifesto proclaimed that secular humanists reject traditional religious beliefs and seek new human purposes and goals. Humanists proclaim there is no divine purpose or providence for human species. No deity will save us. We must save ourselves. They reject both illusory and harmful the promises of immortal salvation or fear of eternal damnation. Thus, humanists believe that individuals determine what is right and wrong, which are the basis of both judicial and Christian beliefs. Belief that moral values derive from human experience. Ethics is autonomous and situational, that we should strive for good life here and now. They believe that reason and intelligence will guide mankind and guide to a better world. They stress individual freedom without moral restraints, recognize the right to birth control, abortion, divorce, and that the variety of human sexual exploration should not in themselves be considered evil, that humanists condone homosexuality with all other forms of sexual perversion. They support the concepts of individual freedom, such as an individual's right to die with human dignity, euthanasia, the right to suicide, advocate democracy and persistent participatory democracy rather than a republican form of government, republican based on laws of God, mainly. They advocate the separation of church and state and the separation of ideology and from the state. They advocate alternative economic systems, the need to democratize the economy. Humanists promote socialism, in other words. They advocate elimination of all discrimination based upon race, sex, religion, and various other things. They propose foreign aid and birth control for developing nations. They call for international cooperation in culture, science, and arts and technology across ideological borders. So what we see here is the secular humanism versus Christianity. And we could look at the different worldviews. The term worldview refers to any philosophy, theology, ideology, belief system, or religion that helps to understand the existence and nature of God and his relationship with man. A worldview contains beliefs about theology, philosophy, ethics, biology, psychology, sociology, law, politics, economics, history, truth, and afterlife. Secular humanism and Marxism include religious beliefs, since both philosophical systems espouse beliefs about God, his non-existence, and his lack of relation to man. The fact that God is either non-existent or dead, according to secular humanism and Marxism, provides a frame of reference in the world. Beliefs affect attitudes towards other beliefs, values, and lifestyles, and their relationships to others sharing the same or differing worldviews. The New Age movement, or cosmic humanism, says a lot about theology, politics, biology, says about law and social justice. Each worldview offers perspectives to those above mentioned disciplines, and each discipline has worldviews view implications. All people, including children, have a set of conscious or unconscious presuppositions that guide their thoughts and actions. Schaefer said he defined presuppositions as the basic way an individual looks at life, his basic worldview, the grid which he sees the world. Presuppositions also provide the basis for his values and therefore the basis for his decisions. Worldviews are not inherited. They are learned. Many students absorb the secular worldview from their classroom simply because the parents don't reinforce a biblical worldview at home. Many historians, philosophers, and scientists claim objectivity in their chosen field. And many Americans adapted the idea that basic educational skills and facts can be taught without a religious or philosophical basis. Some others, like Dabney, explains the impossibility of neutrality in education. The instructor has to teach history, cosmogony, study of origins, psychology, ethics, laws of nations. How can he do it without saying anything favorable or unfavorable about the beliefs of evangelical Christians, Catholics, Unitarians, deists, pantheists, materialists, fetish worshippers, all who claim equal rights under the American institution. His teaching will indeed be playing the play of Hamlet with the part of Hamlet omitted. A person's worldview shapes his conclusion he draws. The answer to every educational question is ultimately influenced by a philosophy of life. Every system of education has an aim. Philosophy formulates what is conceived as the end of life. Education offers suggestions as to how to get there. Without some kind of philosophical or religious environment, Christian, Marxist, or other religious system, the word education is meaningless. Since education possesses no substance of itself, it has to have a spiritual, intellectual, and emotional, physical substrate or worldview. Source of Christianity is biblical as opposed to being channeled or from manifesto. Biblical Christianity worldview is theistic. Philosophically, it's logocentric. In other words, it's based upon God's word. Ethically, it's moral absolutes. And we see this all the way through. Biology, Christianity is creationist. Psychologically, Christianity is at least dualistic, believing in spirit, body, or soul. And sociologically, Christianity supports traditional family in Ephesians. Legally, And legally, Christianity supports moral law and natural law. Truth for Christian comes from God's revelation as opposed to the reasoning or feelings. Politically, Christianity favors limited government with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness being God-given rights that the government should protect. Economically, Christianity supports the right to own property and to create capital based on documented ownership of goods and the legal right to perform services. Historically, Christianity, for some, upholds a literal six-day creation with a belief in the metamorphic recreation of the individual person occurring at the moment of conversion based upon the acceptance and appropriation of the finished work of Christ at the cross as payment for his or her sins. So we can look at all of these. Each one of these worldviews has beliefs concerning all of these issues. And now we can look at the law of tax-exempt foundations. Many tax-exempt foundations actually have power. In other words, although there's a great deal of evidence to suggest that secular humanism is responsible for what is happening, their programs could never have been implemented without the support of tax-exempt foundations. Some people believe that the great foundations are responsible for our current problems. In other words, without the funding of the Rockefeller Foundation and others like it, then Carnegie Endowment Foundation, Kinsey's, and others, there would not have been all of these things happening. So yes, it has to have funding. Following the communist takeover of China in 1950, the Senate appointed a special committee to investigate why our State Department placed an arms embargo on the nationalist Chinese and brought Chairman Mao to power. The committee also discovered that both the Rockefeller Foundation and the Ford Foundation funded communist propaganda outlets in the years preceding the fall of China. The 83rd Congress commissioned Congressman Carol Reese to investigate the tax-exempt foundations to determine why they had financed communist organizations. The Reese Committee discovered that in 1915, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace launched a propaganda campaign to force the United Nations into World War I. Many of our large foundations were actively promoting communism and socialism. The Rockefeller Foundation financed Alfred Kinsey's badly flawed study of human sexuality in his effort to undermine the moral standards of our nation. The Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Education Foundation, and the Ford Foundation had used grant-making power to take over American education and force our colleges and universities to abandon their religious beliefs and moral standards. The foundations influenced state departments and policy and were largely responsible for bringing communism to China. The foundations were working to undermine our constitutional form of government. A group of wealthy men set out to block the Reese Committee investigation. Congressman Wayne Hayes was assigned to the committee to disrupt it. During a 185-minute testimony, he interrupted a total of 246 times, yet the media steadfastly refused to report what was happening. The Reese Committee discovered that the tax-exempt foundations were working closely with the Rhodes Trust, with the Rhodes Scholars, and were being assigned to strategic positions in our government. Some think that it was the Lucas Trust. Some people insist that the hierarchy are responsible for our problems. They are supposedly wise men who have evolved through successive cycles of reincarnation to reach a state of divinity. They are called the Ascended Masters, the Masters of Wisdom, the Elder Brothers. Before you reject that concept, I must point out that many important people believe in the hierarchy and support their programs. The Lucas Trust, used to be called Lucifer Trust Company, but the Lucas Trust, which has thousands of supporters or followers, promotes belief in the hierarchy. It has offices in New York City, London, and Geneva, Switzerland. Some of the most important men in the world belong to that organization. And Gary Kaw, in his book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, lists those. The fact that most of the people have never heard of the Lucas Trust or hierarchy reflects the degree of control that exists today over what American people think. Robert Mueller belonged to the Lucas Trust and supported such objectives. He was Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations for many years, and his World Core curriculum is currently being used in schools throughout the world to introduce students to the occult thought. It was actually Alice Bailey was the one who wrote the book Education for a New Age, and he copied directly from Alice Bailey's material, which were channeled, according to her, by her Dua Ko, a spirit guide, in other words, a demon. Her books, along with Madame Blavatsky's writings, are the foundation of New Age thought. Some people believe that it's the Illuminati. Some well-informed people believe the Illuminati still exists, that it's major force behind the deep drive behind global government. Adam Weishaupt and four associates founded the Illuminati on May 1st, 1776. That's an important day. That's when our Constitution was administered. Their goal was to destroy all governments, all religion, the rule of the world. Within a few years, they recruited a number of prominent men and began to infiltrate Masonic lodges across Europe. They could work under the cloak of secrecy protected by blood oaths. Although the Illuminati was officially disbanded in 1785, it continued to exist within Freemasonry and was the force behind the Jacobins and the French Revolution. The revolutionary movement of the 19th century culminated in the Communist Revolution in Russia and the establishment of the Bolshevist state. Why did the communists select May 1st, the day of the Illuminati was founded, as their national holiday? Although the Illuminati was officially disbanded, Weishaupt's followers firmly entrenched in Masonic lodges by then, and the blood oaths prevented the Freemasons from revealing the dark secrets. 96 years later, Albert Pike, the father of modern-day Freemasonry, wrote, was the same remembrance preserved or perhaps profaned in the celebrated Order of Templars that became for all of these secret organizations of the Rosicross, Cross, of the Illuminati, of the Hermetic Freemasons, the reason for their strange rites, of their signs, and above all, of their mutual devotedness and of their power. Some people think maybe it was the Jews. A number of convincing arguments are made to convince us that the Jews, or Jewish bankers, are our enemy. The first is, many of the Bolsheviks were Jews, and almost all of the original members of Lenin's Politburo were Jews. There are several valid responses to that charge. Although many of Lenin's followers were Jews, all but one of them was subsequently executed, and that's a poor way to reward Jews if they were the force behind the Bolshevik Revolution. Leon Trotsky was Jewish. He was tracked down in Mexico and brutally murdered. All but one of Jesus' original disciples were Jews, but that doesn't make Christianity a Jewish conspiracy. The third response can be found in Anthony Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. He noted that many Englishmen fought on our side during the Revolutionary War, but that didn't make the Revolutionary War an English war. It must be the Jesuits. Some Protestants believe the Jesuits are behind our current problems. Ignatius Loyola, organizer of the Society of Jesus during the 16th century, it was to be an army of priests dedicated to the defense of the Catholic faith and the Pope. In recent years, the goal of the order has changed, and many priests are currently promoting liberation theology, in other words, Marxism. Malachi Martin wrote about the tragic turn of events in his book, The Jesuits. The same dark spiritual forces that have permeated other religious organizations have here taken over the Society of Jesus and diverted it from its original calling. Some people think it must be the Masons. Many of the men who signed our Constitution were Masons, and the Masonic architect was commissioned to design our wall, the street plan for the Washington, D.C. Every federal building of our nation's capital bears a Masonic plaque, and five of our last 11 presidents have been Masons. A sixth was a member of the DeMolay's, a Masonic club for boys. According to a book, 10,000 Famous Freemasons, most of our state governors, judges, and legislatures have been or are Freemasons. The Masonic Order controlled the United States Supreme Court between 1941 and 1971 and drastically changed our society. Four of the six Supreme Court justices who voted to remove God and prayer from public schools were Masons. Tom Clark, William Douglas, Earl Warren, and Hugo Black. Why did they do that? Because the Masons worship the great architect of the universe, and the goal of Freemasonry has always been to change our nation from a Christian country to a secular society. They have accomplished their objective. The Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas was a Freemason when he addressed the American Bar Association in Louisville, Kentucky. In 1960, he bragged about he and his fellow judges have turned our Constitution on its head. Their goal was to destroy our way of life, and they have succeeded. Others believe it's the New Age. A leaderless but powerless network is working to bring about the radical change in the United States. Its members have broken with certain elements of the Western thought and may even have broken continuity with history. It's called the Aquarian Conspiracy. It's a conspiracy without a political political doctrine, without a manifesto, without conspirators who seek power to disperse it, and whose strategies are pragmatic, even scientific, but whose perspective sounds so mystical that they hesitate to discuss it. Thousands of world leaders embrace New Age thought, beliefs, and their occult philosophy is gradually replacing secular humanism in our schools. New Age concepts include exploration of human sexuality, environmentalism, worship of Mother Earth, and embracing of a different God. Some of the agenda of the New Age, we can see, it follows the very same things that I've been talking about with all the other groups. The modern New Age movement has a definite agenda. We see this. You can see that on this slide. Has an agenda by their constituents, adopted much after the same ideals as Alan S. Alice Bailey, manifesto of the New Age for a new world order, universal credit card system, a world food authority, world health authority, world water authority, universal tax, universal military draft, abolishing of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, and a one world leader. So we go to the world New Age beliefs. What are the New Age beliefs? Well, the origin of the movement dates back at least to 1875 with the theosophical teachings of Helen Petrovna Blavatsky, in the late 1920s with Alice Ann Bailey. The Theosophical Society, as it was called, espoused the abolishment of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, promoting the unity of other religions, claiming that their teachings were revealed by a spirit or elemental guides. They emphasized heavily the evolution of self-deified master Aryan society in a one-world New Age religion and social order. So Bailey founded the Lucifer Publishing Company, which later was called Lucis Trust. Bailey's teaching established the symbol of the rainbow as their identification sign, discussed exclusively plans for a religious war, forced distribution of the world's resources, mass planetary initiations, theology for a new world order, worldwide disarmament, elimination of obstinate religions. She even discussed sacrifices, sacredness of a new world leader, number 666. So some people believe that it's the new world order, then it must be Quest. And the order of Quest was, interestingly enough, some people believe that it's a force behind unifying world events. Manly B. Hall wrote about it in his book, The Secret Destiny of America. He noted that members of the secret group placed an unfinished pyramid on the back of the Great Seal of the United States back in 1782. On the reverse of our nation's Great Seal is an unfinished pyramid to represent human society itself, imperfect and incomplete. Above it floats the symbol of esoteric orders, the radiant triangle with all its eye, all-seeing eye. There is only one possible origin for these symbols, and that is the secret societies, which came to this country 150 years before the Revolutionary War. There can be no question the Great Seal was directly inspired by these orders, the human quest, and that of the fourth purpose of the nation. After the members of the order placed the occult emblem on the back of the Great Seal, it remained hidden there for almost 150 years until Henry Wallace convinced President Roosevelt it should be displayed on the back of the dollar bill. Both men were 32nd degree Scottish Rite Masons. and must be Rosicrucians. The Rosicrucians believe that they are a primary force behind the world events. The Order of Knights of the Rosy Cross, or the ancient secret society, or originated with a German knight who traveled to the Near East to study the Oriental magic. They claim that the Holy Scriptures reveal only part of the truth, and they understand the ageless wisdom that you must study to understand their teachings. Albert Pike tells us that the mystery religions pursue the holy word that is lost. It was the same remembrance preserved or perhaps profaned in the celebrated Order of Templars that became for all secret associations, the Rosy Cross of the Illuminati, the Hermetic Freemasons, the reason for their strange rites or signs. What was the source of power for these groups? It was their secret knowledge. And then we have the Skull and Bones. Many people believe the Skull and Bones is the primary force that controls the world. It was organized in 1832 as a chapter in chapter 322 of the German Secret Society, and has maintained its occult traditions by operating as a fraternity where the secret oaths and bizarre customs are accepted as normal. Some people believe it was the extension of the Illuminati, and this group, for over 165 years, prominent families have sent their sons to Yale University to become bonesmen. And once they are inducted into the fraternity, they are assured prominent positions in life. Many become bankers, captains of industry, or politicians. All bonesmen help their brethren to advance. Many of these people have become prominent members of the government, and people think that they have been chosen for that purpose. We see that Theosophy is one of those that must be the organization that is controlling the world, and its orders of others who believe. In fact, Helen Blavatsky claimed to have several times entered Tibet, which at that time was practically inaccessible to foreigners. It was there that she claimed to have all met the secret masters or adepts, who she said appointed her as their worldly representative. She wrote some books that were amazing, at least amazing in their influence. And Corey McLaughlin and Gordon Davidson co-authored his books, Spiritual Politics, in which they discussed Madame Blavatsky's influence in the Western culture. Over the last 100 years, the ageless wisdom has spread widely in the West, beginning with the work of the Russian Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. Her seminal work, The Secret Doctrine, published in 1888, synthesized Christian, Jewish, and Islamic mysticism with Eastern teachings of Hinduism, Taoism, and Buddhism, showing their common roots and comparing their sacred texts. The origin of the New Age movement, environmentalism, Christian apostasy, the modern-day occultism, can be traced back to Madame Blavatsky and Theosophy. Have you ever wondered how Adolf Hitler seized power in Germany, or why he and the henchmen launched, slaughtered millions of helpless human beings? Almost everyone has heard of the 6 million Jews who perished during the Holocaust, but very few people have heard of the 12 million others who were killed in Hitler's death camps. How can we explain such barbarity and the fact that knowledge of the deaths of 12 million others has been suppressed? Adolf Hitler read Madame Blavatsky's book, The Secret Doctrine, nightly. That was the source of his power and his ability to control others, some think. After the war, Winston Churchill suppressed efforts to expose Adolf Hitler's occultism. Why? Well, Corrine McLaughlin and Gordon Davidson wrote, Winston Churchill reportedly insisted that the black magic of the Nazi Party not be revealed to the general public after the war, and that has been suppressed. Margaret Sanger was a theosophist, and her eugenic policies of birth control programs were products of her occult beliefs. Henry Wallace was a theosophist. He convinced President Roosevelt to have the emblem on the back of the Great Seal of the United States. So we see elements from this. Friedrich Nietzsche was a theosophist. There is nothing more necessity than truth, he says, and comparison with it, everything else is only of secondary value. This absolute will to truth, what is it? It's the will not to allow ourselves to be deceived. So we see that a lot of these organizations were contributors, and we need to understand that this is part of the worldwide socialism that is coming about in this country and throughout the world. And this has been the end of part two of socialism and its influence upon Christianity.